Time is 8:15. All right, so I wanted to discuss the following story with Adel Kazilski. What happened, I think as we know, everybody, the world is aware of the terror attack that took place a decade ago in Mumbai. And it is now a decade later. Their son, the son that survived, his name I think is Yaakov, Moshe, and he is now going to have his bar mitzvah. And where is he going to be having it? He's living in Israel, of course, but he is going back to India to celebrate his bar mitzvah at the Chabad house in Mumbai. So he was 2 years old at the time when his parents, Rabbi Gavriel and Rivka Holzberg, they who were the Chabad shluchim, were killed, were murdered. And of course, it was also became very, very well known that his nanny, the person looking after him at the time, it saved his life, and she came to live in Israel. She flew to Israel, in fact, and ultimately became an Israeli citizen. She today lives in Jerusalem with a group of younger Indian women, and she works for Aleh, which is a network of children with special needs. She says her Hebrew actually is still terrible; it hasn't improved at all, and she wants to live in Israel for another 4 or 5 years just to make sure that to see Moshe boy grown up. I just think it's just the most unbelievable story. It's connected. The Indian Prime Minister speaks about him. Netanyahu speaks about him. And he's really became a symbol of hope. And now what he's doing is going back to Mumbai 10 years later to celebrate his bar mitzvah. And of course, shlichim there, they live there, and they try and maintain the legacy of the family. So I just wanted to get some kind of I don't know why the story continues to move me. Maybe it moves everybody. There's something very, very circular about it. It comes and it goes, and there's tragedy, but magnificence. There's faith. There's all sorts of things happening in the story. And I wanted to ask Adel Kazilski her thoughts on it.
It is a very captivating story. I recall just sitting and watching, and you know, the news for those like days, you know, trying to see what is going on, and absolutely horrified at the outcome. But I think that this story speaks, Jewish history speaks, our resilience to the difficulties that we have found ourselves in so many, many, many times, you know, both collectively as a people and individually. This kind of like seems to be an individual story, but it is a story of our collective conscious, you know, our conscience in this world where we are attacked. And what I, as I was listening to what you were saying, and of course I know the story, I thought to myself, this is our story. It's that even though we are put down, we are faced with the tragedy of parents being ripped away from a child, of people, two people who really did absolutely no harm in the world. On the contrary, they dedicated their lives with absolute self-sacrifice in service of others, to make others feel better, make other, you know, provide lodgings, accommodation, safe places. The stories abound in the kindness and the goodness that the Holzbergs, Rivki and Gavi did. And this kind of like just tells us how deeply embedded is our desire to bounce back and not allow evil to take us over. And I think it was just, the gene was passed on to Moshe Holzberg. Imagine a child, you know, who went through this trauma, who does not know his parents, the greater community. He's going back to the very place where his parents are murdered to confirm his commitment to living a life of goodness and kindness, to a life that's dedicated to others. And it's his dream to come back and be part of the shluchim there that
it's
are
incredible.
In the Chabad.
It's just unbelievable.
I have to share with you, though, just a couple of two weeks ago, there was a huge gathering of rabbis from all over the world, the Chabad Kenos, where Chabad rabbis gather once a year for inspiration. And they actually did quite a few things in commemoration, since it was the 10th Yortzeit of Gabi and Rifki. It actually happened at the same time that the Kinnis happens every single year. And there were two stories. I'm going to quickly share one of them with you. Gabi has a sister who for many, many, many years didn't have children and went through a tremendous amount of pain and heartache, went through a lot of infertility treatments and really, really had given up hope. And they had found one doctor that was going to help them. And you know how intense the course is. They have to be at the doctors for tests every single day. And they got the news of Gabi and Rifki's passing. And they were, you know, like had to suspend absolutely everything and go to Israel to be with the family in mourning, you know, when they buried them. And that was the week in which she was going through her fertility things, et cetera, et cetera. And she phoned up the doctor and said, listen, you know, I can't go through it now. Obviously, my pain, you know, the anguish is just way too much to bear. And I'm not sure exactly, I can't remember the entire story, but somebody turned around and said, is this the way you think Gabi and Rifki would want you to live, to like actually give up? On the contrary, right. During Shiva, she was sitting Shiva, go back and do what is needed. And in their merit, you know, now that they're in the world of truth, you know, hopefully they will help. And she did. She fell pregnant from that the entire cycle. I think named the child Gabriel after the, right. And then she landed up having another four kids over it. And, you know, there was another story of a Chabad rabbi who had a commemoration for this wonderful couple, and there was a fertility doctor there. And he was talking about the five murdered Jews that were in Chabad house. And he went up to the rabbi and he said, you know, I don't ever want anybody to lose up hope. I'm giving you a commitment. I want to replace the five people that died. I want to give it, gratis. And this rabbi knew another rabbi in another place that actually didn't have any kids, and they put them in touch, and they also had kids through it. And so you kind of like see the work of Gavi and Rifki flowing
extending way beyond their life.
This is the way to react when we do see tragedy. There's always that want of why, and it's not right, and I'm throwing it all up, and I don't believe, and I can't. The truth is that in that depth, if you actually see the hand of God, so much good, so much positivity flows from it, and that is the way, that is the resilience we need to build, that in that we need to turn things around and do another act of goodness and kindness.
It's incredible, and I often think that this has emerged this way because of where it happened. India is a place like that, because, you know, certainly when I went to India a couple of months, to Mumbai a couple of months after this event. I've told our listeners about it before. And I wanted to go to the Chabad, and I didn't know how. I didn't know how to find it, and I was trying to get hold of people to give me the exact address, but it's a very, very, very confusing area. And I was at a hotel, and I just spoke to a taxi driver, and he said, well, just ask any taxi driver, because we all know it.
Yes.
And he took me there, and he was telling me how the area, how Chabad House is revered in Mumbai because of what happened. It's almost become a place of holiness for the people of Mumbai and the people of India. And it was an incredible thing, because instead of being a place of tragedy and death, they've actually, the people of India have elevated Chabad House there to be something, you know, of in another dimension. And I thought that was very interesting.
I want to add one more thing, because this little slot is, do we live in prophetic times? I've got to tell you, one of the offshoots of this entire tragedy is, as you mentioned earlier, the meeting of Prime Minister Netanyahu with the Indian Prime Minister, and the incredible relations, you know, diplomatic relations and agricultural and financial. They've got incredible trade relations now with India. And I believe that this is part of the messianic, puzzle, because one of the things that we do learn is that Abraham had other children after Sarah died. He got reunited with Hagar, and he had other kids, and he sent them off to the east with gifts. And our Kabbalistic masters teach that this is where we get the so-called Eastern religions that have become polluted with the wrong stuff but have an essence of truth to it. And this coming together now of the Indian people back in alliance with the Jewish nation, I think is a step forward in, again, the various nations of the world returning and coming back to what Abraham wanted, which was a world of peace, a world of harmony, and it certainly is part of the messianic thing. And I think the catalyst was this yes. attack in Mumbai.
Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. So it's just the only thing I worry about with this whole thing when I was reading that article is I hope that somehow the international pressure that Moshe, baby Moshe, as he's known, doesn't feel that pressure because he's got such an important role to play. But, in public scrutiny, I think, with all the public scrutiny, I think it becomes quite a difficult mission to live up to.
Look, he's got incredible grandparents yes. on both sides. He comes from a very resilient family, a very strong family. And, you know, if he certainly has the genes of his parents, I'm sure he's going to be a light unto the people and unto the world and showing strength.
Absolutely fantastic. Adel Kozelski, thank you as always. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that story, 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman, and this is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 High FM.